Welcome to Audiobook Break with Audiophile Magazine, where twice a week you can hear unabridged classic audiobooks one chapter at a time. We're listening to Homer's The Iliad, read by Anton Lesser and published by Naxos Audiobooks.
Book 12, The Fight at the Barricade. Thus as Patroclus, Menoetius' fine son, looked after wounded Eurypylus in his hut, Trojans and Achaeans kept fighting on in clusters. The Danaan ditch and the high broad wall weren't going to hold out long. They'd built the wall, then dug the ditch around it, to protect the ships and guard the ample plunder stored inside. But they'd built it without sanction from immortal gods. They'd made no splendid offering. No sacrifices to the gods, asking them to keep their swift ships safe, so the wall soon fell apart. As long as Hector lived, and Achilles' anger did not relent and Priam's city wasn't captured, the huge Achaean wall remained intact. But after so many of the finest Trojans died, many Achaeans too, though many did survive, in the war's 10th year, Priam's city was destroyed. When Achaeans sailed back to their dear native land, then Poseidon and Apollo planned to erase that wall by stirring up the raging power of all rivers flowing from Mount Ida to the sea, Rhesus, Heptapurus, Chersis, Rhodius, Granicus, Aesepus, the sacred Scamander, and Simoeis, where many oxhide shields and helmets had fallen in the dust, along with a race of people half-divine. Phoebus Apollo merged the mouths of all these rivers, then for 9 days drove the flood against the rampart. Zeus brought constant rain to wash the wall away into the sea more quickly, and Poseidon too, the earthshaker himself, holding his trident, led the work, his waves eroding all foundations, wood and stone Achaeans had worked so hard to set there. He smoothed the shores of the fast-flowing Hellespont, covering huge beaches once again with sand. The wall gone, he changed the rivers back so they flowed as before, their lovely waters in their customary channels. All this Apollo and Poseidon would do later on. But then the din of war raged round the sturdy wall. The battered timbers on the tower rattled. Argives, broken by Zeus's whip, were all hemmed in beside their hollow ships, held back by fear of Hector, whose powerful presence scared them, for as before he battled like a whirlwind. Just as some wild boar or lion faced with dogs and huntsmen keeps turning, confident of his strength, and men form in a line preparing to go against the beast, hurling spears in volleys from their hands, still it doesn't tremble, show any fear in its brave heart, but its courage kills the beast. Repeatedly it whirls itself around, threatening the ranks of men. That's how Hector then moved through the troops, urging men to attack the ditch and charge across it. But his swift-footed horses balked, standing at the very edge, neighing loudly, terrified, because the trench was wide to cross. They couldn't easily jump over it or get through. On both sides there were steep banks along its length with many large sharp stakes fixed in the upper edge, set there by Achaea's sons as a protection against their enemies. There was no easy way for horses pulling chariots with wheels to move across. Even men on foot weren't confident about it. Then Polydamas, coming up beside bold Hector, said, "Hector, you other leaders, you allies, it's foolish to think of driving our swift horses through this trench. It's difficult to get across with those sharpened stakes projecting from it right by the Achaean wall. There's no way any charioteer could get down and fight. There's not much room. I think we'd get badly hurt. If high-thundering Zeus intends to help the Trojans and harm Achaeans wipe them out completely, I'd prefer that happened right away so Achaeans all die here, far from Argos, unremembered. But if they turn us back, drive us from the ships and trap us in the trench, and if Achaeans then reorganize, I don't think any of us will get back to our city with the news. But come, let's all agree to what I now propose. Attendants should hold the horses at the ditch. We'll arm ourselves with heavy weapons, then all follow Hector, bunched up tightly. Achaeans will not push us back, if it's true they're already headed for destruction. What Polydamas had just proposed pleased Hector. With his weapons, he jumped from his chariot to the ground. The other Trojans did not hesitate. Seeing him do that, they leapt quickly from their chariots and left them there. Each man told his charioteer to keep the horses in good order by the ditch. The men broke up in groups and organized themselves to form five companies, with each one following its own leadership. Some went with Hector and worthy Polydamas. They were the most numerous and the best, especially keen to breach the wall and fight on at the hollow ships. With them as third went Cebriones as the third commander. Paris led the second group along with Agenor and Alcathous. Helenus and godlike Deiphobus, two sons of Priam, led the third contingent, with a third commander, warlike Asius, son of Hitticus, whose huge horses had carried him all the way from Arisbe by the Selleis River. The fourth group of warriors was headed by Aeneas, Anchises' brave son, with Archelochus and Acamas, two sons of Antenor, well skilled in all the elements of war. Their famous allies Sarpedon led. He'd chosen to command with him Glaucus and warlike Asteropaeus, for they seemed clearly the best of all the others after himself, but among them all he was preeminent. These men linked themselves with sturdy bulls' hide shields, then in their eagerness made straight for the Danaans. They thought no one could stop them as they charged the ships. Other Trojans and their famous allies followed what excellent Polydamas had said to them, but Asius, son of Hitticus, leader of men, did not want to leave his horses or their driver, the attendant charioteer. He brought them with him as he went for the ships. The fool! He would not escape his grim fate and come back from the ships to windy Troy, proudly boasting of his chariot and horses. Before that happened, an unwelcome fate took him on the spear of Deucalion's proud son, Idomeneus. Asius moved off to the left of the line of ships, where Achaeans used to pass with horse and chariot when returning from the plain. That's where he drove his chariot and team. He found the gates unbarred. Men had drawn the long bolt and were holding them ajar, just in case they might save one of their companions escaping from the battle to the ships. At those gates, Asius firmly aimed his horses. His men followed, shouting loudly. They thought Achaeans could hold out no longer, that they'd be assaulting the black ships. How wrong they were. For at the gates they found two men, two of the finest, proud-hearted sons of Lapith spearmen. One was powerful Polypoetes, son of Perithoos, the other Leonteus, a warrior like man-killing Ares. These two made their stand before the lofty gate like two high-topped mountain oak trees, which defy wind and rain each and every day, anchored there by huge, extensive roots. Just like that, these two men, trusting the power in their arms, held their position as great Asius approached. They did not run off. Holding bulls' hide shields up high, with loud shouts, Asius' men came straight for the well-built wall behind Lord Asius, Iamenus, Orestes, Adamas, Asius' son, Thoon, and Enomaus. Up to now, the two Lapiths had been urging well-armed Achaeans from inside the rampart to defend their ships. But when they noticed Trojans charging the wall and Danaans running off and shouting, the two men hurried out to fight beyond the gates. Like wild mountain boars taking on a confused mob of men and dogs attacking them, the beasts charged sideways, shattering trees around them, ripping out the roots, gnashing their teeth noisily, till someone hits them with his spear and takes away their lives. That's how the shining bronze sounded on these two as they moved out against the flying weapons. But they fought bravely, relying on their strength and on those troops standing on the wall above them, who kept throwing rocks down from the sturdy tower, defending themselves, their huts, their well-built ships. Stones fell to earth like snowflakes which some strong wind, pushing shadowy clouds, drives downward in a storm. So they strike the fertile earth. That's how thick and fast flying weapons rained down then from Trojans and Achaeans. Helmets and bossed shields rang out as they were hit with rocks the size of millstones. Then Asius, son of Hitticus, groaned in vexation, struck his thigh and cried out, "Father Zeus, how you love to lie! I didn't think these warrior Achaeans could withstand the force of our all-powerful hands, but they're like yellow-banded wasps or bees who've made their home by some rough road and won't leave their hollow house but stay there, guarding their offspring from the hunting men. That's how these men refuse to yield the gate, though there's only two of them, until they kill us or are killed themselves. Asius complained, but his words did not win over Zeus's mind, for in his heart he wished to give Hector the glory. Other troops were battling on at other gates. It would be hard for me to report all these events, even if I were a god. For by that stone wall blazing fires broke out everywhere. Though in distress, Achaeans had no choice but to defend their ships. Gods helping Danaans in the fight was sad at heart. The two Lapiths now began to kill in earnest. Powerful Polypoetes, son of Perithous, with his spear struck Damasus through his cheekpiece. The bronze helmet didn't stop the spear. Its bronze point tore straight through his skull, splattering his brains all through his helmet. That checked his fighting fury. Then he slaughtered Pelon, as well as Orminus. With his spear, Leonteus, Ares' assistant, hit Hippomachus, son of Antimachus, in his belt. Then, pulling out his sharp sword from its scabbard, he charged the Trojan mass, struck Antiphates, hitting him at close range first. So he lay there on his back, motionless. Leonteus then struck down in quick succession Menon, Iamenus, and Orestes. All these lay prone there on the all-nourishing earth. While the two Lapiths were stripping shining armour from the dead, young troops, with Polydamas and Hector, the most numerous and bravest of the men, the ones most keen to breach the wall and burn the ships, still stood along the ditch in some perplexity. For as they dissembled, eager to cross the trench, a bird had gone above them, a high-flying eagle moving past the left flank of the troops, gripping in its talons a huge blood-red snake, still alive, still struggling. It hadn't lost its will to fight. Doubling up, it struck the bird that clutched it beside the neck. The eagle, stung with pain, let the snake fall down onto the ground, dropping it right in the middle of the crowd. Then, with a cry, it flew off, downwind. Seeing that writhing snake lying there in their midst, Trojans shuddered. It was a sign, a powerful omen from aegis-bearing Zeus. Polydamas then approached bold Hector and spoke out. "Hector, you're always taking me to task, though I give good advice in our assemblies. For you maintain it's not appropriate that someone else speak out against you, either in a council meeting or in war, for he should always back your leadership. But now I'm going to say what seems to me the best course we should take. Let's not advance to fight Danaans by their ships. In my view, this is how all this will end. If that omen was sent to Trojans keen to cross the ditch, a high-flying eagle on our army's left holding in its talons a blood-red snake, still living, which it let drop before it reached its nest, thus failing in its purpose to bring that snake back for its offspring. Then, like that bird, if we, with our great strength, breach the gates and the Achaean wall, and if Achaeans then retreat, we'll come back from the ships by this same route in disarray, leaving behind many Trojans slaughtered by Achaean bronze as they defend their ships. That's how a prophet would interpret this, someone who in his heart knew the truth of signs and in whom the people placed their trust. Hector, with his gleaming helmet, scowled and said, "Polydamas, I don't like what you've just said. You know how to offer better comments. But if you're serious in what you say, gods themselves must have destroyed your wits. You're telling me to forget the plans of thunder-loving Zeus, what he promised, what he himself agreed to. You tell me to put my faith in long-winged birds. I don't care, or even notice whether they fly off to the right, towards dawn's rising sun, or to the left, towards the evening gloom. Let's put our trust in great Zeus's counsel, for he rules all mortals, all immortals. One omen is best. Fight for your country. Why are you afraid of war, of battle? Even if the others are all slaughtered by Achaean ships, you need have no fear that you'll be killed. Your heart is neither brave nor warlike. But if you hold back from war or with your words convince some other men to turn away from battle, you die right then, struck by my spear." Hector finished speaking. Then he led his troops away. They followed him, making a huge noise. Thunder-loving Zeus then sent gusting storm winds down from Ida, driving dust straight at the ships to disorient Achaeans and give glory to Hector and the Trojans. Trusting Zeus's sign and their own power, they tried to force the great Achaean wall, dragging down the tower's supporting beams, smashing parapets, prying up projecting columns Achaeans had first put into the earth to shore up the wall's foundations. They dragged these back, hoping to undermine the wall. But even now, Danaans did not give ground. They repaired the parapets with leather hides, then fired weapons from there over the rampart at the attacking Trojans. The two Ajaxes moved back and forth along the wall, urging men on, firing up the fighting spirit in Achaeans. To some men they called out words of encouragement. Others, the ones they saw clearly moving off, back from the fight, they taunted with abuse. "Friends, whether you're an Achaean leader or average or one of the worst, for men are not all equal when it comes to battle. There's enough work here for everyone, as you yourselves well know. So let no one here turn back towards the ships, now you've heard from your commander. Keep pushing forward. Keep shouting to each other so that Zeus, Olympian Lord of Lightning, may grant we beat off this attack, repel the Trojans, and drive them to their city." Shouting words like these, the Ajaxes incited the Achaeans to fight on. As snowflakes on a winter's day fall thick and fast, when Counselor Zeus begins to snow, to demonstrate to men his weapons, first he calms the winds, then snow steadily, till he's completely covered high mountain peaks, jutting headlands, grassy meadows, fertile farms of men shedding snow on harbours, inlets of the blue-grey sea where waves roll in to push back snow, while from above all the rest is covered over when Zeus storms with heavy snow. That's how thick the stones fell then on both sides, some thrown on Trojans, some from Trojans on Achaeans. The noise reverberated all along the wall. At that point, glorious Hector and the Trojans would not have crashed the gates or long bolts in the wall if Counselor Zeus had not stirred his son Sarpedon against Achaeans, like a lion going at short-horn cattle. Sarpedon held his round shield in front of him, forged by a smith, of beautifully hammered bronze, the inside formed of leather stitched in layers, held in place with golden wires encircling the rim. Holding this shield before him, brandishing two spears, he hurried forward like a mountain lion, long ravenous for meat, whose bold spirit pushes him to go even into the protected sheepfold to attack the flock. And even if he comes across herdsmen with dogs and spears guarding sheep inside, he won't leave that fold without making an attempt. So he springs on one, seizes it, or is hit himself in the first rush by a spear from some swift hand. That's how godlike Sarpedon's spirit drove him then to assault the wall, break down the parapets. He called to Glaucus, Hippolochus' son. "Glaucus, why are we two awarded special honours with pride of place, the finest cuts of meat, our wine cups always full in Lycia, where all our people look on us as gods? Why do we possess so much fine property by the river Xanthus, beside its banks, rich vineyards and wheat-bearing ploughland? It's so we'll stand in the Lycian front ranks and meet head-on the blazing fires of battle. So then some well-armed Lycian will say, they're not unworthy, those men who rule Lycia, those kings of ours. It's true they eat plump sheep and drink the best sweet wines, but they are strong, fine men who fight in the Lycians' front ranks. Ah, my friend, if we could escape this war and live forever without growing old, if we were ageless, then I'd not fight on in the foremost ranks, nor would I send you to those wars where men win glory. But now 1,000 shapes of fatal death confront us, which no mortal man can flee from or avoid. So let's go forward to give the glory to another man or win it for ourselves." Sarpedon spoke. Without making any move, Glaucus agreed. They marched on straight ahead, leading their large company of Lycians. Seeing their advance, Menestheus, son of Peteos, shuddered, for they were aiming at his part of the wall, bringing destruction with them. He looked around at the Achaean tower. He hoped to see some leader to protect his comrades from disaster. He saw both Ajaxes, so keen for war, standing there. Nearby was Teucer, who'd just come from his huts. But there was no way they'd hear him if he shouted. The noise was too intense. The din of smashed-in shields, gates and horsehair helmets, that sound reached heaven. The doors were now all barred. Men stood outside them, trying to knock them down by force to pass on through. Menestheus quickly sent the herald Thootes to Ajax. "Noble Thootes, run and call Ajax, or rather both of them, if that's possible. That would be the best solution. Here we face complete destruction any minute now. Lycian leaders are pressing us so hard, the ones who previously in bloody fights have demonstrated their ferocity. But if they are having trouble where they are, with fights breaking out, let mighty Ajax, son of Telamon, come by himself, and let that expert archer, Teucer, come with him." Menestheus finished. Thootes heard him and obeyed. He ran along the bronze-clad Achaeans' barricade, then came, and standing by both Ajaxes, spoke up at once. "You Ajaxes, leaders of bronze-armed Achaeans, the son of Peteos, raised by the gods, is calling you to go to him and help relieve the battle strain, if only for a while. And he'd prefer you both come. That'd be the best solution. There they face an imminent destruction. Lycian leaders are pressing them so hard, the ones who previously in bloody fights have demonstrated their ferocity. But if you're having trouble where you are with fights erupting, then let mighty Ajax, son of Telamon, come by himself, and let the expert archer Teucer come with him." Thootes finished. Great Telamonian Ajax then agreed. At once he spoke winged words to Ilian Ajax. "Ajax, you and powerful Lycomedes, you both stay here. Stand firm and rouse Danaans to battle hard. I'll go over there, deal with that fight, and come back quickly once I've helped them out as best I can." That said, Telamonian Ajax left. With him went Teucer, his brother, both from the same father. Pandion went too, carrying Teucer's curving bow. Moving along the wall, the three men reached the place where stout-hearted Menestheus stood. Here they found soldiers hard-pressed in the fight. The Lycians, led by powerful commanders, their kings were climbing up the parapets like some black whirlwind. Ajax and the others jumped right into the fight. The noise grew more intense. Then Ajax, son of Telamon, was the first to kill a man, brave Epicles, companion of Sarpedon. Ajax hit him with a massive jagged rock lying inside the wall near the top. No man now alive could heft that stone in his two hands, not even someone young and strong. But Ajax raised it high, then hurled it, smashing the man's four-ridged helmet and completely crushing his entire skull. Epicles fell like a diver from that high tower, and his spirit left his bones. Teucer struck mighty Glaucus, son of Hippolochus, with an arrow shot from high up on the wall as Glaucus was moving up. He hit him on the arm on a part he saw exposed. That stopped Glaucus' charge. He climbed back down the wall, but stealthily, so no Achaean man could see that he'd been hit and boast aloud about it. Sarpedon was upset at Glaucus' departure when he noticed it, but he did not neglect to keep up the attack. He lunged at Alcmaeon, Thestor's son, speared him well, then yanked his spear out. Alcmaeon came with a spear. He fell forward, his finely decorated armor, all of bronze, resounding with the crash. With his strong hands, Sarpedon grabbed the parapet and pulled. The whole construction fell apart, breaching the wall, creating a passage through for many men. Ajax and Teucer now advanced together to attack Sarpedon. Teucer hit him with an arrow on the gleaming strap around his chest, which held his protective shield. But Zeus defended his own son from deadly fates to make sure he'd not be destroyed by the ship's sterns. Ajax then jumped in, striking his shield. The point did not pass through, but its momentum knocked Sarpedon back in the middle of his charge. Sarpedon withdrew a little from the parapet, but did not retreat completely, for his heart was set on seizing glory. So he called out, rallying his godlike Lycians. "You Lycians, why is your fighting spirit lessening? It's hard for me, although I'm powerful, to breach this wall alone and carve a pathway to the ships. So come, battle on with me. The more men there are, the better the work done. Sarpedon called. Fearing the censure of their leader, troops made a heavy push around their counselor king. On the other side, the Argives reinforced their ranks inside the wall. For both sides, a major fight ensued. Lycians, though strong, could not break the Danaan wall and cut their way through to the ships. Danaan spearmen could not push the Lycians back, repel them from the wall. Now they'd reached it. As two men with measuring rods quarrel over survey markers in a common field, striving for a fair division in some narrow place, that's how the parapet kept those troops apart. High on the wall, they hacked each other's armor, leather bucklers and large round shields across their chests, quivering targets. Many men were wounded, flesh slashed with pitiless bronze, those who turned aside and left their backs exposed while fighting, and those hit right through their shields. Everywhere along the wall, along the parapet, men's blood was spattered from Trojans and Achaeans. But even so, Trojans could not dislodge Achaeans from the wall. Just as an industrious and honest woman holds her scales, a weight on one side, wool on the other, until they balance, so she can glean a pittance for her children, that's how evenly the battle raged, until Zeus gave glory above all other men to Hector, son of Priam, who was the first man to jump inside that wall of the Achaeans. He raised a resounding yell, crying to his Trojans, "Drive forward, you horse-taming Trojans! Breach that Argive wall! Then burn the ships with a huge fire!" With these words, he drove them on. Their ears all caught his call, hurling themselves at the wall in a dense mass, gripping sharp spears they began to climb. Hector picked up a rock lying before the gates, thick at its base but tapering sharply on the top. Two of the best working men now living could not lever that stone out of the ground easily into their cart, but Hector carried it with ease alone. Crooked-minded Cronos' son made it light for him. Just as a shepherd has no trouble carrying a ram's fleece in one hand, hardly noticing the weight, so Hector lifted up that rock, then carried it straight to the doors guarding the strongly fitted gates, high double doors with two cross pieces holding them inside, secured with a single bolt. Hector moved up closer, planted himself before the doors, his legs wide apart to throw with greater force, then hurled that rock right at the center of the doors. It smashed both hinges. The stone's momentum took it clear through the doors, the gates groaned loudly. The bolts were sheared right off. The impact of that boulder shattered all the planks. Glorious Hector, his face like night's swift darkness, leapt inside. The bronze which covered his whole body was a terrifying glitter. In his hand, he held two spears. Once he jumped inside the gates, no one moving out to stop him could hold him back except the gods. From his eyes, fire blazed. Wheeling through the throng, he shouted to his Trojans to climb the wall. His men responded to his call. Some scaled the wall, others came pouring through the hole made in the gates. Danaans were driven back among their hollow ships in a rout, and the noisy tumult never stopped.
That's the end of today's audiobook break. You've been listening to Homer's The Iliad, read by Anton Lesser and published by Naxos Audiobooks. It's one of a remarkable series of classic books published by Naxos. For a full list, go to naxosaudiobooks.com. And check out audiophilemagazine.com for reviews of hundreds of audiobooks so you can make the right listening choice. This has been Audiobook Break with Audiophile Magazine. I'm Joe Reed. Good listening.